we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a sign spotted in Blythburgh Church, read by Corrie Caulfield.
If you need to use the toilet, follow the path behind the church and go down the steps.
Thanks to Jeremy from Leamington Spa for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Fred McCauley and Bob Mills. And opposite them on my left, Sue Perkins and Jeremy Hardy. Fred, why might some people be in favour of forgetting old acquaintances? Or, if you're listening in Scotland, why is it hooray for Holyrood?
Scotland's been in the news, and it gave David Cameron the ideal opportunity to show what a master of comedy he was. It's not a referendum they want, it's a never-endum. He's not the Prime Minister, he's the Rhyme Minister.
Alex Salmond said something about that there were more pandas in Edinburgh Zoo than there are Conservative MPs in Scotland.
Yeah, boom, take that, Cameron.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a bit of a grenade launched across the border by our First Minister, Alex Salmond, who says that we're going to have the referendum and it'll be in autumn 2014. And Cameron says, no, it won't. So they've compromised and they're going to have it in autumn 2014. It's a big year for us in Scotland. It's the 700th anniversary of 1314, which, as you all know, was Bannockburn when Scotland took on England. If you don't know the result, look away now. If you remember the end of Braveheart, they said, in the year of our Lord, 1314, patriots of Scotland, starving and outnumbered, charged the fields of Bannockburn. They fought like warrior poets. They fought like Scotsmen and won their freedom. Which is, I think, maybe an indication of why you were always beating us, England. We fought like warrior poets. Put the conventional weapon away, lads. I have an ode.
You need referees for your visa to come on the show after independence, Fred.
Have don't you mean referees, you mean neverees.
Now you put that joke in context, you see quite how bad it really is.
Now, we've got lots going on in Scotland. 2014, we've got the Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles, we've got the Commonwealth Games. These are all good indicators that there might be a yes vote. If we get a good potato harvest, that'll be even better. A visit from Sean Connery, there's no end. There's no end, as Sir Sean himself would say, to the excitement. Just in case you don't know, there is a lot of debate about what is going to go in the paper for the referendum.
Okay.
It's either going to be yes or no, or maybe. There's the national debt to consider. How much of that does Scotland take on? Alex Salmond said we'll take a fair percentage. Alistair Darling said you'll take a fair percentage and the Royal Bank of Scotland.
That's going to hurt.
But the big question is, of course, do they have any oil? And of course, no, we used to. What we do have is a much more important thing, though. We've got fresh water. You'll be wanting that in a few years.
Well, yeah. You won't. I was thinking that sometimes we're a bit rude about Scotland. I was thinking that, so I've done
sometimes.
A little tiny. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, because it's a fantastic country, fantastic success, the traditional Scottish food, McDonald's, there's all sorts of... So I've done a little quiz.
Great.
A little Scottish quiz. And anybody who gives the answer get an extra point. OK. The Hamilton Mausoleum in South Lanarkshire has the longest echo of any man-made structure in the world. How long is it?
Well, I was in there in 1977 and I haven't heard back yet.
Anybody else?
Eternity.
15 seconds. What is the official animal of Scotland?
Mongoose.
Is it a deer?
It's the unicorn.
Of course it is.
How did you not know the unicorn?
Unicorn.
What country has a mythical beast? It's like saying Wales. You know, the national, you know, it's the griffin.
It's the dragon, isn't it?
I suppose that's similar to
that.
But dragons are real and griffins are made up, silly.
Do we have the Cybermen?
Yeah. Scotland's First Minister, Alex Salmond, has defied Westminster by setting 2014 as the date for a referendum on Scottish independence. Scotland merged with England under the Act of Union of 1707, but Scotland kept its own legal system, approach to education and haute cuisine. Salmon wants 16 and 17-year-olds to be able to vote in the referendum as they are seen as more pro-independence, believing that Scotland should be allowed to stay out as late as it wants. 2 points to Fred. Bob, which controversial project is full steam ahead?
Oh, right, this is the train, isn't it? Right, sorry, I've got my ignorance. I'm not being facetious here, but it's called HS2.
Yes.
I understand the H and the S. That's obviously high and speed. Mm. What's the two for? Was the one that I missed?
Yeah, it goes through Kent. It takes its time going to the Channel Tunnel.
So they're having HS2.
Yeah.
And so apparently what they're doing is they're going to build a train that goes at 250 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Which they do all the time in Japan and France and most countries of Asia. So what they're saying is that by the year 2026, then they're going to drag this country kicking and screaming into the late 1980s. And this is the bit I really don't understand. These trains go from London to Birmingham, Leeds and Manchester, because apparently some people are in a hurry. I don't know why you would want to go to Birmingham, Sheffield, but they do want to go there.
Because they're lovely.
Yes, of course, they're lovely.
So
that was
not thinking the speed thing through. Those poor railway children. I mean, Jenny... Jenny Agata waving her bloomers is just going to be a blur.
All this sounds like... there's no controversy at all. It sounds like perfect common sense. But the same people who protested against the canals, saying this is a terrible thing, there'll be all these boats and horses carrying ceramics around the country, we don't want it, are now complaining about the trains because they live in the Chilterns, which are apparently quite nice. So what the government have done, I think very, very kindly, is they've agreed to build 7 miles of tunnels, and then these people can go into the tunnels and they don't have to see the trains. I think it works something like that.
But why are they worried about them being near their homes? Because if they're that fast, they won't be near for long.
But exactly.
I suspect this is just chance, OK, but the original route for the HS2 went through the ornamental gardens of the stately home of Tory donor David Allen, and it's been adjusted since he threatened to suspend his donations. Isn't the world full of the most extraordinary coincidences?
It's just... Samantha Cameron's dad.
Yes. Lord Astor.
Lord Astor argued there was no need for a high-speed line when Skype and the internet allowed us to quickly see that Birmingham is not worth the journey.
On the little map that I saw, it carries on to Glasgow and Edinburgh. And it says
that's going a bit mad. No, it's a Y shape connecting London to Manchester and Leeds, and I believe a giant M, C and A are going to follow. I think it's going to be a...
It's going to come all the way up to the border and just kind of give us two fingers and then turn back.
Yeah.
Talk about rubbing salt into the wound.
We're going to send you out and say, look at what you could have won. The border between England and Scotland will be terrible, though, because you'll be delayed for hours while they scrape the bottom of the trains for students from North London that their parents are sending up there for free education.
The government has given the go-ahead for the HS2 high-speed rail link between London and Birmingham, but opposition groups are vowing to fight the decision through the courts. The new trains will hurtle through the shires so fast that only the most eagle-eyed passengers will be able to spot the Daily Telegraph readers waving their sticks and pitchforks. 2 points to Bob. Sue, who has decided that welfare reforms weren't fair to the unwell?
Yes, this is a story about Krilnar Omri Taktak, the destroyer, or, to use his Earth name, Chris Grayling, the Minister for Work and Pensions, who has been trying to push his work reform bill, and it's hit a stop at the Lords because the bewigged Blue Bloods have decided this is a bridge too far. But it won't stop him. And basically, these are ESAs, which I think are Employment Support Allowance.
All right.
Which in some cases they're aiming to reduce so that some disabled people could have £30 a week, which, to put in plain Tory speak, is a stonkingly good bottle of Pouilly Montrachet Premier Cru. That will be their total allowance. And it's going to be means tested from now on, which means that, for instance, if you have the use of your hands and you can type, you can work in an office, but if you remain incapable of doing anything, you can be Deputy Prime Minister. And it's a essentially trying to put a limit on how, for instance, cancer patients will be able to have this allowance for 12 months. I don't know if anybody knows anyone who's had cancer, but cancer doesn't go, I'm here for a 12-month period only, and then I'm leaving. And basically, some of my Labour MPs have said this has crossed the line of British decency. In my opinion, it's not just crossed it, it's basically done a wee on it, then picked the line up, and then used it as a skipping rope in front of disabled people going, ha, 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 look at what I can do. Do you want £30 a week?
So you're saying it's wrong? Do you think it's wrong? See, I think it's marvellous. Finally, a government that is not afraid to ask what we've all been thinking, when are the terminally ill going to finally pull their weight? This is...
But five plucky Liberal peers stood up. Five Liberals, count them.
Plucky Liberals?
Plucky Liberals. There are five principled Liberal peers in the country. It makes you feel safe. Sorry, Bob, carry on.
No, I was going to talk about the Liberal peers because Lord Freud... Is it Freud?
Yes, Freud, yes.
And on a completely separate note, where we're talking about cuts, has far too many Freuds knocking about.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
I used to like Clemens and the bloke who did the Dorby paintings, but everywhere you look now, there's Freud somewhere, and I just think that we could get rid of two or three of those and save some money.
You scare them now. Be a Freud. Be very, very...
they're all complaining about it. All they're saying is that we should have a closer look, and that if someone is no longer needs this benefit, they perhaps shouldn't get it. And I watched a couple of documentaries over the Christmas period. Fascinating. One of them was a young chap, terribly dire straits, in the Fen district, and he met a convict in a graveyard and gave him some pie.
Right.
And within an hour, yeah, was living high on the hog in London. The other was a disabled chap who was in terrible, and I'm sure was getting an ESA, and then his father's employer bought him, I wrote it down, not just a turkey, the biggest turkey in the shop. So these people's lives can improve, that's okay. What I'm saying.
Apparently, cancer sufferers took to Twitter to express their delight. You think, oh.
You can type.
Enough to use Twitter.
Yeah.
Not well enough to carry a hod of bricks up onto the roof, eh? The government has suffered three defeats in the House of Lords on its welfare reform bill. The Lords defeated a one-year time limit on cancer sufferers claiming employment support allowance and a requirement that they request a second dose of chemotherapy by saying, please, sir, can I have some more? Another defeat was on the proposal to stop young disabled people automatically qualifying for ESA because they haven't built up any national insurance contributions. The government's next proposal is to make wheelchairs coin-operated. 2 points to Sue. Jeremy, which primary candidate is in pole position?
Well, it looks as though the Republican Party candidate for the next general election in America is going to be Mitt Romney, whose name is actually Mitt. I thought it must be short for something. It's not. His name is William Mitt Romney.
What could it be short for? Like mitten?
Unmitigated.
Unmitigated. So that's his name, William Mitt Romney. But he thought, why go with my perfectly sensible first name, William, when I could go with my mental middle name?
Well, what's happened to American politics? Barack and Mitt?
Well, at least Barack is a Kenyan, is a proper Kenyan name. It's like Graham in Kenya, probably. But Mitt is just...
He's the Graham of Kenya.
He's in many ways. In many ways.
Do not miss the good old days of Bill and George. OK, maybe not George, but...
The American Republican Party, we haven't really got an equivalent. They're sort of discussing things that we'd given up talking about years ago. You know, many of them, like Rick Perry is a creationist, right? They don't accept that climate change is caused by fossil fuels because they don't believe in fossils, basically. They don't.
They don't believe in fuel.
They think God made the oil and put it in the earth with a big palette knife, like in a Victoria sponge. Michelle Bachmann, thankfully, dropped out because she was a favourite of the Tea Party. Now, that's a very weird... Basically, the political philosophy of the Tea Party is that the Deadwood stages are heading on over the hill. that's pretty much it. Because the big thing that stands against your man, against Mitt, is that he's a Mormon. He's a Mormon. He's one of those people that knocks on the door and says...
Hello, would you like a pamphlet?
Yeah, one of them. Have you heard the good news about Jimmy Osmond?
I got stopped in the street. I was in Falmouth, I think, by two very handsome young men.
You're saying there are Cornish Mormons?
No, they were American. They go out and... Mitt Romney did 18 months in France as a Mormon missionary and said it was the most unsatisfactory work, trying to convince the French that...
Wouldn't have been great if they'd sent him to Germany and he'd gone to the door and he said, hi, I'm Mitt Romney, and they're going, where is Romney?
Okay. I'll give you another point for talking about why the First Lady is currently in the news.
Has she got a book out?
No, she has been written about.
She's been written about, yes.
Oh, she's got a cookery book out.
Has she?
Yes, she has.
Thank God she's doing something important. This is
she's
a woman...
She's got a book because they've planted a vegetable garden in the rose garden, and she's got some recipes of things you can grow. Don't look at me bug-eyed like that. This is what you can grow yourself, because she wants the poor people of America to pull their fingers out and start growing their own food. And...
It's not the first time they planted a vegetable in the White House.
No, that's true. After a clear victory in the New Hampshire primary, Mitt Romney is leading the race for the Republican Party presidential nomination. After a television debate, polls showed that 35% of Republicans would vote for Romney, 21% would vote for Ron Paul, and the remaining 44% would vote for the little animated eagle in the corner of the screen. But at the end of that round, the scores are Sue and Jeremy have got 4 points, Fred and Bob have gone into the lead with 5. Before we start round two, here is a cutting from the Radio Times.
BBC Two, Scotland. 1 p.m, Greater Edinburgh Cross Country Run. 3 p.m, film. Nobody runs forever.
And our thanks to Tom Leslie for sending us that. Fred, what sends families barking mad?
Dogs. It's been reported that families have a great deal of strife over the family pets. Pet lovers, the Macaulays, we've 2 now. We had 3 black labs, and if you've got dogs, you have to be strict with them. We don't feed them from the table. We don't let them in certain rooms in the house. We don't let them up in the furniture. Those were the conditions that worked pretty well with the kids. Fair chance it'll work with animals as well.
We used to have a dog who was rather disturbed. I blame myself. We called him Fetch.
It destroys human dignity. You'll find yourself in the street having a perfectly nice conversation with one of your neighbours, and then you'll look down and you think, you're holding a bag of shite. It's still warm.
Yeah. That's the fun part.
You've become self-conscious about it because I'm looking at it, and now you've put it in your coat pocket.
Do you not think dogs must think that we value this in some way? Yeah. Yes. Done this mess, and then you take the time and you pick it up and you keep it in your pocket. The dog's thinking, I'm going to do more of those.
I've got a lovely golden retriever, and I take him to the woods back in my house, and he goes deep, deep into the woods behind the bush and does it there.
No, that's all right.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. And I leave it there because I think if you tread in that, well, what are you doing walking in the middle of the woods?
I think it's true. I think dogs do create massive rows, and the most nuclear of arguments took place after I went to stay with my partner at a National Trust property and left, and everything was beautifully tidy. And then a week later, we received an email from the housekeeper saying, and I quote, that one of our dogs had misbehaved by coiling something out and leaving it behind one of the Queen Anne sofas.
I'm not sure you're supposed to stay in National Trust property. I think you're just supposed to go to the gift shop and then leave. Is there for a reason. No. You're not supposed to crawl under that.
But if you want to have a romantic time, there is an argument to say that having the dog in the bed is not romantic. I mean, I'd never stopped David Blunkett, but there's a sort of uncomfy thing of it, I think.
If anybody here has got dogs, we feed them dry dog food and we buy it in bulk bags, 15-kilogram bags. And my wife and I went out one night and we stayed out a bit longer. It went past the dog's feeding time at 7 p.m. and we came back in, opened the door into the room where we keep them, and they had managed to get the 15-kilo bag down, and Labradors will scoff the lot.
Yeah.
And they were lying on their backs with these big distended stomachs. Oh, you're home. Oh. Listen, I wouldn't go making any dinner for us. We've had, right? We thought we'd defend for ourselves.
The average dog is the cause of 3 family arguments a week and almost 2,000 during its lifetime, according to research by insurers Esure. The most common cause of arguments is what to do with the dog during holidays. Do you let it drive? Is it drinking too much? 20% of couples argue about who should pick up dog mess. The correct answer is, of course, Piers Morgan. 2 points to Fred. Bob, what to-do list stops the twos being terrible?
This is part of an advertising campaign, someone who makes formula. These are things that they say your 3-year-old should be able to do. which is a wonderful thing, because if you've got young children, the one thing that's lacking in your life is people telling you how you're doing it wrong. They should be feeding the ducks. All right. Making sandcastles, and it does say, helpfully in brackets, on the beach. Answering the phone.
What?
No.
Yes, what? Exactly, that's on their list. Unless you can teach them to say, no, Dad's not in at the moment, but he's waiting for a check to clear. They should be dancing with no inhibitions and singing loudly in public. So they should be drunk, basically.
This is a nightmare of Facebook, isn't it? All these people just putting on how fantastic their kids are. And you think, look, all kids under three can do the animal noises. Your kid is not special. Your kid will probably be a disappointment to you. Get over yourself.
This list never says how dull children are. Any child under the age of six is just boring. They fall over for no reason at all. You're walking down the road and suddenly the child has fallen over. You think, what the hell is the matter with you? Until they can colour within the lines, honestly, they're hardly worth the trouble. This one...
That is a bit weird, that not being able to colour within the lines thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that house that they keep drawing.
Yeah. Yeah. The square
one. Four enormous windows. And that spring coming out of the chimney. What?
This list was ridiculous. Item 20, grow cress in the shape of their name. Honestly, I tried that. I tried that with mine. It always came out as 666.
Our treehouse is still popular among the young people.
Very, very much so, Jeremy, I believe.
Good. Do they still make witches brew in old saucepans in the back garden?
Yes, and mud pies for all.
Rah.
Oh, mud pies is on
mud
there.
Mud pies is on there.
Where are you supposed to get mud in this day and age? I don't know.
Where your Labrador's been by the sounds. Yes.
Making a mud pie has come top of the potty list, a rundown of 36 must-do milestones for toddlers. Item 21 is wear pants on your head, or as Jeremy calls it, Saturday. 2 points to Bob. Sue, why is working such a bore?
This is another one of these studies that's come out that said that one in four people are bored at work, or as we call it, Radio 4, Jeremy Hardy syndrome, who spends most of his time in the news quiz now drawing penises on pants, whilst pretending to be thinking earnestly about the latest white paper on the health.
That is not a penis.
It's a penis!
When I sat next to him, he drew breasts.
Did he?
Yeah. Oh, he's a Renaissance man, isn't he?
So basically, the idea is that one in four people are bored, and the more bored we are at work, the more we tend towards eating unhealthily. We eat chocolate, we drink more caffeine. The report suggests that the best way to counteract this is to encourage healthy eating, because that's what you want when you're a dead-end job in human resources. You want quinoa coming out of the snack, the vending machine. Or a goji berry. Or something from the foothills of the Himalayas that's a superfood that will revitalise seven of your major organs. So you can live a bit longer to stare at a clock and think, why?
But this whole thing about people who've had a boring day at work and having a drink at the end, this is where they're going wrong, you see. My work is not boring because I start the day with a drink.
Some terrible jobs, let me tell you. My worst one, I think, was cleaning toilets in a Croydon hotel, which I did for 2 years. And my penultimate weekend, there was a very, very beautiful young Arab man in his sort of early 20s who'd been staying at the hotel, and he said, I have left a little tip for you, a little something. I thought, this is marvellous. I was 17. What could it be? Money, an invitation to Qatar to take part in a polo match. And on the seat, he'd left a half-eaten bag of pistachio nuts. And I would have eaten it were it not for the fact it was very much on a toilet seat.
Was this the moment you became a lesbian? You thought, if this is what I look forward to in a life with men...
I have a little gift for you.
Worst job, come on, worst jobs anybody's ever had.
Did you ever do a stint as a postman at Christmas time? I did that for 2 years.
Have you ever steam open an envelope, Fred?
No, I didn't. No, never.
Just
did
me
that.
Then.
Did you ever nick a card that you thought had money in it?
No, never did that. No.
I don't believe you were ever a postman.
I worked on an assembly line for a while in a plastics factory, and my job was, there was little men that they used to sell razors in, and my job was to put the eyes on the little men.
Oh.
And every 50th man, I made a cyclops. To put one eye in the middle.
Made you a lesbian?
Yes, it was.
I once did a Radio 2 panel show. I can't even remember the name of it, but it was so bad that the security had to wake a man up because he was snoring so loudly.
Was he the host? Researchers from the University of Central Lancashire surveyed 102 office staff. Basically everyone in Liverpool who's still working. The study found that 1 in 4 office workers complained of chronic boredom, with 3 out of 4 being too bored to even fill out the form. One of the ways it is suggested that boredom can be tackled is job rotation, which is the scientific term for spinning around on your office chair. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. McCauley.
I, Sandy, have a headline about a courtroom report from the Press and Journal, which is a publication from the northeast of Scotland, which is part of the United Kingdom for the time being. And I think they've maybe missed a word out from this headline. Page 23, it says, "Dwarf performed sex act on train." I just think maybe the word "whilst" has been missed.
Mr. Mills.
This is from Mr. Richard Cranitch, and it's from his local paper in York, and just because I love the use of the word drama. Towel fire drama. A tea towel was left on a hob and caused a fire in Driffield. Firefighters were called to Mill Street at about 5:20 after the towel had caught fire. The fire was extinguished by the occupier dropping it into the sink.
Ms. Perkins.
Helen Heenan sent this in, and this was seen in the Guernsey Evening Press. And it's an example of the purely literal here. This is obviously part of the personal ads and the general classified ads under the heading Livestock. Clothes horse, brand new, £5.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Ian McCrate, and he says, "I got the following text message from East Coast Trains earlier this morning. RET to KGX on your route. A person hit by a train is no longer causing disruption."
Let's take a look at the final score. Sue and Jeremy have got 8 points, but this week's winners are Fred and Bob with 9. Before we leave you, here is a warning from a jigsaw puzzle instruction sheet sent to us by Katie Harding.
Plastic bags can be dangerous. Keep this bag away from babies and children made in China.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the newscast were Fred McCauley, Bob Mills, Sue Perkins and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Totsig, and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair script was written by Roderick Crooks, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Benjamin Partridge and Nadia Kamal. The producer is Victoria Lloyd.